All right, so we began the program, if I remember correctly, in June.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended the program in September. It was evaluated by planning. It was evaluated by state. It was found to be good.
Mm-hmm.
It was, it had to be 44, because when it went on the line, it went on the line with the first, that's the answer, with the first community development money, because I can remember being very upset because it was community development money. That's not because I didn't want the money. What I was afraid of is if community development dried up, the city would walk away from it.
Right.
That is no longer possible. This is a service that the city has accepted as their responsibility, and you will find it in every write-up that the city puts forth as its basic services. So that for me, this is, you know, one of the real positives that has come.
When did this happen, the change of it? After it was evaluated, it went into effect the following
year? It went into effect. We had done the best job we could with the minimum people. It was now fleshed out so that we had crews that moved around the city far more comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
And we got some vans so that they, you know, they went out in vans. And
mm-hmm.
at the same time, we developed with Conway, and at that point, we now got a department
mm-hmm.
of environmental control, which Conway was not put in as director of. Conway was white. Frank Williams was the first director. He is now deputy controller of county with Latino. And then there was Bubba. Board chairman of 13th floor.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he was deputy, and Jim Conway stayed deputy. And when Frank Williams left, they named another black
mm-hmm.
who is the president, and his name at the moment escapes me. Mm-hmm. Little guy. But anyway, for the first time in the history of the city of Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm.
there was now a coordinated
right.
approach to cleaning, you know,
mm-hmm.
What I started to say is that when it went on the line, what we had was a crew, several crews, cleaning lots,
mm-hmm.
cleaning city streets.
Mm-hmm.
We had people cleaning sewers and catch basins on a regular basis. And by the way, when we started this business, we discovered to our shock that nobody had a map or even a list
mm-hmm.
of sewers and catch basins in the city. Can you
mm-hmm.
believe this?
Mm-hmm.
They became aware that there was a catch basin or a sewer when it overflowed.
Right.
So then they, you know, ran to clean that up, but they didn't know where they were, so they couldn't prevent. And I don't know whether you're aware of how little, up until this year, how little in the past 10 years, well, 8 years, we flooded.
Mm. Yes,
you would be more aware than you.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, we used to have flooding all the time, and then suddenly we weren't having
mm-hmm.
flooding. Well, that
sure.
was why. At any rate, this I consider an extremely successful and very worthwhile effort on the part of this committee. Now, why did it go forward apart from what I told you about running it at the table? We reported up until we got permission to go ahead with the pilot. This was reported monthly, you know, what we had done, who we had talked to, how much of the program we had already developed, you know, in planning, and it was publicly discussed mm-hmm. at our monthly meetings and, you know, agreed to, and we, you know, the subcommittee would get permission to go forward and so forth mm-hmm. and so on. So that's how it works.
What are the types of programs after this was involved, or were you mainly involved with this? Were there other programs?
Oh, no, at the same time, sure. At the same time, we were working with the rehab and code enforcement in that committee. Now, that subcommittee, we came up with the repair or replacement of sidewalks. We came up with, and that incidentally is still in existence, not mm-hmm. as good as we would like. They modify these things. The minute you take your eyes off of it mm-hmm. and you stop looking over their shoulders, it changes. But unless it changes drastically, you right. still have the program. So that was one of them, selling unbuildable side lots to the adjacent owner was one of the first things that I worked with that came out of the committee, and that's still in existence. And by the way, that's really an excellent program for the city. Incredible that nobody else did it. Unbuildables, incidentally, are smaller than 20 feet.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Well, we worked on the maintenance codes.
Mm-hmm.
And that took years,
mm-hmm.
but we did it. We worked, one of the things that came out of that committee was an administrative decision on vacant property. That is not vacant property that the owner expected to rent momentarily, but property that he was not renting. And the administrative decision was he had 6 months in which to make up his mind as to what he was going to do with it. In the meantime, he had to secure it,
mm-hmm.
That is, board it and keep it secure. And in 6 months, he had to tell the Bureau of Building Inspection, was he going to repair it, improve it,
mm-hmm.
sell it, demolish it,
mm-hmm.
and then he had 6 more months. And they created what I call a tickle file so that they could go back to him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out of that and coming out of the subcommittee discussions and so forth and so on, the Bureau itself developed a file for in which they retained the responsible person in the city for rental property. That had never been a file that you could go to.
Right.
So this is still in existence. No, we didn't do that. We didn't do that, but it came out of discussions because both Paul Imhoff and his deputies from the Bureau sat with us on the rehab. See, it attracted, what we were doing attracted people who wanted to talk to one another, so that directors from URA, that's Urban Renewal, and the Bureau, and Planning, and the Department of Health's Housing Department, all of these people wanted to talk to one another. There was just no way until I showed up with a subcommittee that was a natural. Mm-hmm. So they came.
Mm-hmm.
Judge Livingston was part of us. He wasn't judge then. You know, he was
an attorney.
That's right, but very involved in community affairs, and he was part of what we were doing. You know, it was that kind of thing. And as I say, it wasn't me. It wasn't me as Charlotte. It was the fact that there was somebody like me through whom this could happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was the kind of thing that I was talking about. This is the kind of thing that because of the kind of agendas that I was putting out. Everybody was talking about. We were talking about citywide problems. Well, nobody had really addressed citywide problems before. People address and still do neighborhood problems. Lots of people who care very, very intensely about what's happening in their neighborhood. But what you have to realize is that those problems are not necessarily unique to the one neighborhood. And if you address it on the citywide level, you really get results.
How did people react to you? How did you, when you first went in there, you were not known.
No.
How did you get involved with the other leaders of people, government officials, people like that?
Evidently I was sort of a godsend to them in the sense of, I explained why.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that went well. When it became, now you have to remember that I'm white, I'm Jewish, I'm middle class. Okay. A lot of the people that I'm working with, still to this day, are black.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them not, but some of them fiercely ethnic,
mm-hmm.
fiercely proud
mm-hmm.
of where they're at. And there was a period when we were probably at our strongest, when I was challenged, precisely because I'm white, Jewish, middle class, challenged publicly because how could I possibly understand the problems I was trying to address?
Mm-hmm.
How could I lead,
mm-hmm.
not, you know, the addressing these problems?
Was this an anti-Semitic feeling, or was this primarily because of being white and middle class?
I would say strictly because I was white, middle class.
Mm-hmm.
If it was anti-Semitic.
That was the feeling during the late 60s and 70s.
No, this was the middle 70s.
70s.
This was the middle 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Emergency Black Pride.
Black Pride was really, you know, coming to the fore. Not only, this was a challenge both to my chairmanship, my leadership, for black people, and one of the women that I work with very closely to this day.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, she wasn't having any part of me. And if you promise that you won't name her, I'll tell you who. It was Dorothy Richards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Dorothy...
That often happens when she becomes your best ally.
Well, she's not my best ally, mm-hmm. but the point is that she was used to leading. And she was not leading this. That's not to say that I wasn't deferring to her. That's not to say that I wasn't looking to her. But she's black, I'm white, and I had succeeded with rodent control, and she had told everybody that couldn't possibly be. At any rate, for whatever the reason, the challenge was there, and not only did the challenge come, but she brought into the picture a man, an older black man who was very well known in the Hill, both politically and within the community, as my challenge. I didn't know him.
What was his name?
Henry Woods.
Mm-hmm.
Henry's dead now.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, what happened is the room where we have our meetings holds, or maybe 50, 55 people. The room was lined with standees, you know, 3-4 deep. The papers covered it. It actually appeared in the paper. But what happened is when the challenge was made publicly, several black people, oh, and one of the things I was accused of course, is that I had a maid. And I did. There are things today that I am incapable of doing physically. They don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I was extremely careful, and I am to this day. Mm-hmm. Some people are aware now that, you know, that there must mm-hmm. have been some problem, but I certainly shared it with nobody, so they didn't know why I had a maid. But I did indeed have them. I had a girl that came in every, you know, half day. So that was, you know, one of the public indictments. And a black woman stood up and said, more power to her. If I could afford it, I would be delighted. And then they went on to talk about me, you know, and the compromise that was developed. And I cannot remember whether I think I kept still. I don't know. I can't remember. But at any rate, the compromise was that was developed is that Henry would chair the open meeting and that I would stay as chairperson of the board.
Mm-hmm.
And that was reaffirmed. We had a board meeting, and that was reaffirmed. And I was, I think there was one vote against me that was voted. But at any rate, there it was. And what happened is Henry became one of my best friends. Within a month, he became aware of just where I was coming from, you know? And then we doubled our ability to get places because he would be the stick and I would be the carrot, so to speak, because we'd go with these people and he'd yell at them and he, you know, because they hadn't done what, you know, they promised. And then I'd come in with sweet reason. This was deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
And we took off with all kinds of things. So that, yes, I was challenged, but that was the... that was probably 77 or 78, I don't know. But it really hit the papers. It was quite a business, but... And I was really gratified and stayed with it even more intensely than when I realized how many people that I barely knew me, you know, stood up and talked about what nonsense it was that I didn't understand. And that was what, you know. But sure, you get challenged in the situation. How could you help but be challenged when things were going? You know, when things were happening.
Let me ask you another question. It says, were you ever given awards or honors or other things like that?
No. Not until relatively recently.
What were you given recently?
Well, back in 76, and I consider this a tremendous honor, I should not have said no. I was invited to come on the board of Action Housing.
Okay.
Action Housing is a very prestigious nonprofit organization that does marvelous stuff, did marvelous stuff, and continues to do. And I've been very proud, and I am still on the board at this point as emeritus president. I was given an award, a big plaque. As you know, vice president and very distinguished special service. Of course, I got the Jefferson. I've been on all kinds of committees, but
such as
well, the mayor's committee on women's.
Task
force on women in
issues.
In Renaissance.
Oh, right.
And I was on, asked to serve on that. I was on that. I was on the Health and Welfare Housing Committee. I was and am on the Relocation Board. That's another long story. It took a lot of work. And maneuvering, but not my being on the board, but
no.
But retaining relocation. What else? Well, I've done a number of things out of Action Housing, such as the shelter that came as a. There was a board consisting of the middle-class women that felt that battered, abused and battered women were totally neglected and simply had to be helped. And it began actually, and I've forgotten the lady's name, out in Mount Lebanon in somebody's kitchen. And they did develop a small shelter that was in the basement of the field. That's right. You know about it, then.
Yeah, you speak up. You tell us.
Well, you know, so why don't
you? No, no, that's
right. I don't know much about it.
Well, all right. At any rate, they did have a small shelter. But,
where was that again?
In the theological, Pittsburgh Theological Seminary,
mm-hmm.
in the basement in East Liberty. And that was when, of course, they began in Pittsburgh proper, but they only had room for, I believe, seven women
mm-hmm.
and children, and rapidly found that that wasn't nearly enough, so they were really bursting at the seams. And it was not a good place for them because you had little kids and you really didn't have any place to take them out, and it was confining and it was too small. The seminary was glad to have them up to a point and then suggested that they find other quarters. They began looking for quarters, and they looked and they looked, and they put money down on a house on Thomas Boulevard and got into quite a hassle with that was, I believe that was some kind of an estate, or no, they had a problem with zoning,
mm-hmm.
and they couldn't get past the zoning. But they were stymied, and they had not really come to terms with what they needed and how they were going to do it and what to do about it. So they came, I believe they came to Action Housing, and they said, "Can you help us?" Action Housing pulled together a group of women from every conceivable part of the both housing and community activity and social services that could to brainstorm. And brainstorm we did. Actually, the immediate impetus for moving forward occurred in the women's room, in the ladies' room. That was Terry and a gal who's now in Washington, and me, which happened to be there, and we started talking about it, and we just,
came up with
the idea of let's brainstorm it. If we think we could do it. By then, I knew that I could begin to get property that we might see and animate. I'll think of the rest of her name. She's really a great gal. And she was Senator Specter's administrative assistant here, and he took her to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So she's his administrative assistant there. But at any rate, it was she who was in the bathroom, and Terry Gould, and that's Dr. Terry Gould, who is deputy director of Action Housing.
Mm-hmm.
And her particular area is community liaison and education and everything else that you can imagine. She's a fabulous young woman, really. At any rate, what happened as a result of this unexpected meeting was this ad hoc committee that got together, and the first thing we did with the board that existed, we knew from the very beginning, and I must say this, that we knew we weren't going to take it out of their hands. It had to be their decision. It had to be they, that is the board, who said what, you know, who called the tune. What we were prepared to do was to help them to focus and to help them to reach wherever they needed to go. Well, we did, as Beth can tell you. It was a very exciting and extremely worthwhile activity.
The end result
was a wonderful shelter that exists on Center Avenue. In actual fact, it is probably $1 million installation. That included raising money, you know, helping to develop the ways and means of raising money and so forth. But the most important thing that I think that we offered was crystallizing the needs, focusing priorities, and then moving forward. Helping them to see that staying with the Thomas Boulevard was wasteful, and bringing in the architect's workshop, which responded to us, which was a help to them, and or just identifying various places where money might be had. You know, there were just many things, and make no mistake, this wasn't me. This was a lot of people with tremendous knowledge in various areas. Including the Western representative of the Department of Community Affairs, who sat with us. Just everybody you could think of that could help.
Are you still involved with the women's shelter?
No, we none of us are. What happened is once it became a reality, we said, you know, bless you. We're here if you need us, but and that's as it should be. You cannot work in this fashion in the community if you act the Lady Bountiful, you know, as a group, I mean,
right.
Or you keep a finger.
Right.
You know, you must say you've asked us for help. This is the help you've asked for. Now, if you want anything else, come back,
right.
But you don't stay with it. You bow out. Otherwise, everybody or almost everybody that I've ever met sort of protects his own bailiwick, and in that sense, I'm peculiar. I don't really have a bailiwick. But I do understand it, and it's just wrong, you know. Just because you're invited in because somebody's in trouble at the moment.
Right.
So that's the story. I would never have told you except that Bev raised it.
Let me ask you another question. With all the activities, committees, and various other things, your husband has been very supportive, I assume, for you to do this.
Very.
Have your roles switched in terms of what you did in the house and how he was involved with you because of this?
No, because I tried very hard not to. You have to remember that since I had problems physically, there was always limitation on what I could do. But one of the things that I felt was my responsibility was to minimize. The demand on call, so that when I knew that I had a meeting, I would cook ahead the day before. If I had a morning meeting, I would go to, I'd have dinner with him, obviously, and we had a dishwasher then, we have a dishwasher now, you know, we clear up frequently. He'd clear up if I was too tired, and I'd go right to bed. In that sense, we had a limited social life, which he was more than accepting of, because now he traveled a great deal. So that you know, he felt that this was important from many angles.
Were you involved? Do you have any special hobbies? Or
well, I belong to a reading group that I have belonged to since the late 50s. We are still going strong. We meet every other week.
Is that a, could you describe that? Is that a great book?
No, it is not. It's a unique group. It's a unique group. We have numbered variously 12 to 20 of us. At the moment, we're about 15, except for our emerituses who live now in Florida, and they come back in the summer, then we get bigger, this kind of thing. But we simply are an extremely accepting one of the other. It's a very loose group.
What types of things do you read?
I'm going to turn the tape just a moment.